On March 14, 1986, a dark, cold, and quiet night in Providence, Rhode Island, an ex-con with a penchant for violence dropped into a local bar. He didn't realize he'd just entered jackal territory, and the jackals were hunting. Dennis Wilmot, recently released from the Rhode Island Adult Correctional Institution, ACI, after serving several years in maximum security for his involvement in a shooting, thought he was invincible in a world where the biggest lie was longevity. Committing violent acts all over the United States, he'd established a reputation within organized crime. He was a guy you just didn't screw around with. In his mind, this raised him to a higher status. He grew up in Providence, Rhode Island, a place with a national reputation as a hub of organized crime. His roots here, he believed, preordained his involvement with the mob. Dennis thought of himself as a wise guy because the wise guys often used his skills. He protected their interest. In his mind, by relying on him, they'd tacitly accepted him into their world. He figured if he could work for them, he could hang out with them. He convinced himself he belonged. His thinking, delusional and misguided as his moral compass, would prove cataclysmic. To the wise guys, Dennis was a junkyard dog. They let him off the chain when needed. They chained him up again until the next time. Sometimes they fed him. Sometimes they kept him hungry to remind him of his place. He was not, and never would be, one of them. The wise guys had rules. They had deep family connections. Did the guy pay his dues? Did he wait in line to deserve this status? Did he pay proper respect to the old school mobsters? Would he take care of another guy's family when the guy was in the joint? And most important, was he of Italian descent? A guy can't just point to a fondness for violence on his street resume and expect to be one of them. Violent men were as ordinary as they were disposable. You needed to meet other criteria. Dennis was far from getting a button, the code word for becoming a made man. That had its own set of rules. Violence was Dennis's stock in trade. It made him merely useful, not eligible for inclusion. Dennis built a reputation for extreme violence. He wasn't a moneymaker. He was a money collector, a bone breaker. He didn't negotiate. He knocked you out. They turned him loose when they needed more than intimidation. They used his talents in matters of mutual concern. Dennis gave many beatings for them, extorted people on their behalf, collected unlawful debts, damaged property, committed larcenies, staged robberies, and did whatever else they asked of him. Dennis was willingly on standby for any hired hit, but his usefulness had limits. Their faction was on the move, on the way up in the organization. Dennis grew cocky. He demanded more money and wanted to be on the books full time. He asked for a sit-down with his boss to resolve their differences. Negotiations didn't go as Dennis would like. It just made him more of a problem than an asset. When the boss refused his demands, Dennis asked for more money from the guys he reported to: Vincent, Vinny La Sorsa, and Bruce Leonardo, eventually threatening them. Now he had a real problem. At the same time, a young Rhode Island State Police detective named Brendan Doherty, assigned to the Elite Intelligence Unit, gathered information on the La Sorsa Leonardo crew. The info showed they had gravitas. La Sorsa was a well-spoken, well-dressed, college-educated man, about 30 years old, with an entrepreneurial drive. Known as Vinny, he also enjoyed a close relationship with old-school Providence mobsters. He'd come from the same neighborhood as the wise guys and moved with ease in those circles. He loved his family almost as much as he loved his wise guy status in the Federal Hill section of Providence. Leonardo, recently released from a lengthy prison sentence, was Vinny's half-brother. They were not close growing up because of Bruce's imprisonment, but they became business partners.